This is the Taylor Report at CIUT 89.5 FM. And I believe Tony Leah of Unifor is with us. Are you there, Tony?
I am, Phil. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice to be talking to you. This demonstration, this is kind of an important story, and I feel remiss. Taylor Report's trying to show more and more attention to the labor movement and its work in Canadian society. To have a healthy labor movement, it contributes to, obviously, a healthy democratic society. There was a demonstration Saturday, and I know you're interested in it. It took place in Toronto. There was also demonstrations elsewhere, Hamilton and across Ontario. But can you tell us who organized it? What was it about? What kind of demands?
It was organized by the mainstream labor movement of Ontario, the Ontario Federation of Labor, the Toronto District Labor Council, and the other affiliates of the OFL, and many of the major unions, the nurses, OPSU, steel workers, UFCW, teachers' unions, just to name a few. And as you say, it was in many centers across Ontario, Hamilton, Peterborough, Kingston, North Bay, Orillia, Sudbury, and the biggest demonstration was in Toronto. And it's around taking on the direction of the Ford government, which is privatizing health care and not providing for the needs of workers. So it's demanding improved wages, improved minimum wage, an end to privatization, just transition to deal with the climate crisis, and the major issues that are affecting workers in this province, and which is not different from the issues affecting workers across the country, really. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very important step. It showed that that movement is being built, that it's growing, that there's greater unity from workers and unions around those demands and that movement. But there was one disappointing absence that I have to say, as a member of Unifor, in the searching around that I did, and of course I have to say it's possible I missed something, but in looking at different accounts and pictures, I did not see a Unifor flag or Unifor sign in any of these rallies across the province. Mm. I didn't see a statement from Unifor. I looked at their Twitter account and Facebook, and they didn't mention these demonstrations or ask people to show up to them. And they seem to be rather conspicuously absent, which I think is a disappointing and unfortunate sign.
Yeah. And, of course, we could contextualize that with the point that your union has gone through some trauma and rather dramatic change in leadership, an unexpected one, I would say. It certainly wasn't a smooth transition, as they call it. Mm-hmm. Although very encouraging in that you finally had some pretty lively debate and visible candidates where people were partisan, and which usually sheds more light on matters when you have that. There had been the impression that they were that Unifor leadership was reconsidering some of the old positions, which had led them into pretty embarrassing alienation from the rest of labor. I think, for example, of the Labor Day marches when Unifor came to the exact same area to organize on Labor Day a march, and then took their people and went for a boat ride. Did I get that right? And the others marched down to CNE.
They marched in the opposite direction and got on a boat for a 3-hour cruise in Toronto Harbor.
They came back, did they?
Apparently, I don't know where Gilligan was.
So, and speaking to, I mean, frankly, I mean, this is what we call labor politics. And there was a CLC meeting not that long ago. We interviewed you some about that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Unifor, I don't remember whether they were in attendance, sent in messages or anything like that. But I get the impression that they are rethinking any change in policy since the departure of Jerry Dias as leader.
They certainly are seem to be cooler about it. There has been no reference to it recently. At the Unifor convention, which was last August, there was a strong push from a number of delegates to discuss reaffiliation with the CLC, and people recognize that as
there were motions on the floor, weren't there?
Yeah, there was a motion on the floor, and there was strong support for the need for solidarity in the labor movement, which would mean Unifor putting aside its own its own issues and finding a way to create more unity. And Lana Payne, who at that convention was elected national president of Unifor, indicated sympathy with that idea, but said that it would take more time. But now, there seems to be a cooling off in that commitment, and I am hearing suggestions that I couldn't verify, but I am hearing that they may be rethinking the idea completely of rejoining the CLC, and that would also be pretty unfortunate. It's not helpful to the workers of this country to have one major union off on its own and not participating in the kinds of solidarity actions that are needed.
For the listeners, I mean, this problem of the outlook between the CLC and the OFL and related labor bodies began with the issues of the old sin of raiding. And at the time, Unifor sort of laid out its own game plan for what they were going to do. I mean, basically, there are documents in which they said what they're going to do.
Yes.
And that I wonder if they intend to go into the basement and get those documents and start all over.
It's a good question. That was under the leadership of Jerry Dias, who I don't think you mentioned his name, but you certainly made reference to his disgraceful conduct, which led to him leaving the presidency of Unifor and the election that followed after that. And under his leadership, there was a failed effort to raid the union representing TTC workers in Toronto, and then they launched an effort to try to raid hotel workers who were members of Unite Here Local 75, and that was the reason that they withdrew from the CLC. It was in order to launch that raid, which was also extremely unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
So the net result was a lot of bitterness, unhappiness, division within the labor movement, and not much else.
Mm-hmm. And that led to a phase where Jerry had a little stumble, not like Biden, but a different type of stumble. And that appeared serious. And as a matter of fact, you used the word disgrace, et cetera. However, the Unifor was going to look into this. It was the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, reported on it, some detail.
Yep.
And what exactly were the allegations? What happened?
The allegations that we know about are that Jerry was involved with a company that supplied COVID test kits, that on their behalf he got other employees of Unifor to discuss purchasing of those test kits with employers that Unifor had a bargaining relationship with. Mm-hmm. So this is already a very murky waters, and I think clearly when it's done secretly, leaves the impression of private deals being made, possibly self-enrichment of various people, and the likelihood that the union will be compromised in further dealings with those corporations, because if those corporations do a favor for the president of the union.
Mm-hmm.
And so that came to light because it's alleged by the person who received it that Jerry Dias put $25,000 in cash in a bag and handed it to him as compensation for helping with this effort of getting the test kits purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who received the bag, Chris McDonald, apparently was conflicted about it, and after a few days handed the bag of money over to the then Secretary Treasurer of Unifor, who was Lana Payne. That led to an investigation.
Current
president. That led to an investigation. An independent investigator was commissioned by Unifor to look into the allegations, but given a rather narrow mandate, only looked at that one transaction, and didn't look at whether there were other similar instances or even everything to do with the one instance, because the investigator did not question the supplier company who also had supplied the money. They did not question the companies or anybody from the companies that received or purchased the tech test kits.
Those, by the way, those individuals are to this day unknown.
They're unknown.
It really is rather unfortunate. Mr. Dias is alleged to have done something in connection with X, Y, and Z. So,
and Company A and Individual B, and we have never been privy to that. By we, I mean not only just the public, but even the members of Unifor. And, you know, I remember clearly when this broke in the news that Lana Payne led a press conference in which she said that there was going to be transparency and accountability. She said that we know that you will have, meaning the members, we know that you will have more important questions that you will want answered. We will be available to answer these questions.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the questions, like the ones that you just mentioned, are still being asked by Unifor members, and they're not getting an answer.
Mm-hmm.
she concluded her remarks by saying that she claimed that the incident had been handled well. She said it was an isolated incident, or we're dealing with it as an isolated incident, which is troubling. But she said that it had shown that accountability and transparency to our members is and will always remain our first priority, and that everyone, including the highest elected officers, are to be held accountable. So in terms of this accountability and transparency, we now are more than a year later and finding out that Unifor has said there is not going to be a hearing into the conduct of Jerry Dias. There's not going to be any more investigation of what might have gone on. There is going to be no accountability, because while they say that they maintain their stand that he violated the union's code of ethics, there's going to be no consequences for him. And not only that, but whatever discussions went on between Dias and the leadership of Unifor, which they report as having led to an understanding, and they say Dias and Unifor did reach an understanding as a result of which an internal union hearing is neither necessary nor possible. Dias and Unifor agreed to maintain the confidentiality of that understanding. So I have a great deal of difficulty as a Unifor member accepting that there has been any transparency there or any accountability.
No, it's very striking. I mean, the commitment was it was going to be a proper, he was going to be asked to present himself, and they were going to, and that was postponed due to his, he was indisposed.
Health problems.
Pardon me?
Health problems.
Health problems. And so something happened. But that's not really, yeah, so I could, it's, Now, I saw a report, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, the Globe said that they had made this decision. By the way, they referred also to the police, saying the police had been called, and it had months and months and months and months and months had gone by, and then the police decided that they were not going to continue with it. I don't know their exact language. Now, that, by the way, was a known story. For some reason, they put the two stories together.
That was known in December, and apparently it was in December that the Toronto Police Service notified Unifor that they were not going to lay any charges against Jerry Dias. And I did see that noted in the press at the time, although it was not highlighted. But this time, when the it was kind of announced again and it was reported in all the media, along with the fact that Unifor was not taking any further action. And that means that there really is no sense for the members of the union that the issue has been thoroughly looked at. They can't know now what happened, what might have been connected to it, who all the players were. And they can clearly see that there was no accountability, and certainly there was no consequences for the person that the union leadership says was in violation of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So that is troubling. And I would contrast it with the events at another major union in Ontario, OPSU, where the former leader, Smokey Thomas, and some of his
mm-hmm.
co...
two or three staff.
Senior staff people. The leadership of OPSU commissioned a forensic audit and pledged to reveal the results of that and take action where necessary. And a lot of very troubling information came to light in that audit, which led OPSU to lay charges against Smokey Thomas and the other people, that will be going through the courts, presumably, and there will be a reckoning there, mm-hmm. which there is not with the situation in Unifor. And I happened to be at a meeting today of the retired workers in Oshawa, Local 222, and questions were being asked about it there, and people were saying that we thought we were going to have transparency. We were told there was going to be transparency. Where's the transparency?
Mm.
So, you know, that is already happening amongst...
It's interesting to note that there are plenty of people who actually know all the details.
Mm-hmm.
I assume X, Y, and Z, the company, the business guys, and their lawyers know all about it.
Yeah.
And... you know, these are public figures of some note. Mr. Thomas and Jerry Dias were actually becoming quite interesting to organized labor folks when they appeared with Doug Ford. And
yep.
Occasionally one or the other appears with the leader of the Liberal Party. Then you have a circumstance where they say, well, nothing to see here. You always say, see, I guess that's how powerful people operate.
Mm-hmm.
Little people just have to mind their own business. But it's worrying. And Sid Ryan has published something connected with this. Sid Ryan is a former leader of Ontario Federation of Labour, no friend, by the way, of Smokey Thomas. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know what he thought of Jerry and what Jerry thought of him. During this business about rating, Sid was in the middle of that fight.
Mm-hmm.
So... What was it that Sid published? And people can find that on his Twitter, right?
I'm not sure that it's on his Twitter. It could be. I saw it on his Facebook.
Facebook.
He had received a copy of the letter that seems to have been sent from the leadership of Unifor to members or to locals of Unifor.
So it wasn't it's not a secret letter. It's for their members. It's like a public letter to their to the various locals.
Well, it looks like it is, and I can't verify that it's legit because all I've got is the copy that Sid posted, and that's because My local hasn't provided it to me. Other locals of Unifor that I've contacted have told me, at least the people I've talked to, that they haven't seen it. It's not on the Unifor website. So it doesn't seem to be out there very far, but it looks like it says at the top, letter from the leadership of Unifor to the membership, and it's signed by Lana and the other top five officers of Unifor. But it's not getting circulated to members. It's another instance of the breakdown in accountability and
transparency. And it is this letter that in which they say they're not going to go forward with this.
Yes, and they did tell the media that, but it's in this letter, which I read from, where it says that they've agreed to maintain the confidentiality of the understanding between Gary Dias and Unifor. And I think that to many Unifor members, that idea that there's a deal between the person who was accused of violation of the code of ethics and the current leadership of the union, and that they have an understanding that has to be kept confidential.
By the way, there can't be a next chapter, can there? I mean, unless there's a convention or a meeting. You do have some top meetings where a fairly large number of local leaders do get together and they hear about things, but this is a dead letter now, right?
Well, they have managed to do a lot of sweeping, and they've got everything under the rug, and they've nailed the rug down. So
yes.
unless we can find a way to pry some of those nails loose, they're saying it's...
And our major media are not at all interested.
Well,
they were previous. I have to hand it. It was the Globe and Mail that kicked over the bucket.
I'm not sure, yes. I'm not sure that... reporters are aware of all of the details of this letter, and maybe there will be more interest when they find out that there's this confidentiality agreement that might. Yeah.
But by the way, I got to raise something that I just have to say it. And by the way, and thanks to Sid Ryan, that this has became a discussion point. Mm-hmm. Most of the Toronto Star and Globe and Mail employees are members of Unifor.
They are, in fact.
And as politicians love to talk about, when they get mad at each other, they love to talk about conflict. I mean, Mr. Johnson actually knows Justin Trudeau, for example, and that's a big deal. But here we have, that's their union. And they can't, as members, they're not being informed as, and then there's the problem of what are they going to write about?
Yes. Yeah, no, it's an interesting situation if you were a reporter who's a member of a union and then you're reporting on goings on with that union, and then when you yourself find that you're not being given information from your union about what's going on.
Yeah, you would think that would be so. Which at that moment you have to decide which hat you're wearing. But if your leader says, "Well, we sent this thing out, and you're a member," and you say, "Well, I haven't seen it," shouldn't that go in your story?
You know,
occasionally, journalists do refer to themselves that way. They'll say, "This journalist was not present when allegedly that happened," something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Well. As they say, inquiring minds are going to keep. We'll follow this. Before we let you go, can we ask you, because I know that people are just hanging on the edge to find out, but how much is the battery going to cost us, and what do we get for this? Justin said he fixed it, and we get to have the battery plant, and then somehow a big hole developed, and then the premier got involved, and he says he'll fix it. So now we've got two angels helping us.
Yeah, well, there's two battery plants. The first one was discussed a year ago. That's the Stellantis one in Windsor. And our different levels of government promised lots of our money to Stellantis to have that plant up in operation. And then this year, Volkswagen cut a deal to build a new plant in St. Thomas to make, to assemble electric batteries for Volkswagen plants, in, which are all in the United States and Mexico. So they're going to build the batteries here and ship them to there. It's going to take about 3 years to get that up and running. And because of new legislation in the United States, which offers extra incentives for that kind of work, the federal government and the Ontario government said that they were going to match the U.S. subsidies and that Volkswagen stood to get $13.2 billion to manufacture batteries for themselves in St. Thomas, which it will provide about 3,000 jobs. So it's the, you know, the piddling sum of $4 million a job. And that's supposed to be good for us. I think it's more good for Volkswagen, but that's, I guess, a matter of opinion. And so then, of course, predictably, Stellantis said, hey, wait a minute, we're only getting $2 billion. What's going on here? And so now they are going to redo the agreement with Stellantis, and Stellantis is going to be receiving possibly up to $19 billion from the provincial and federal government to provide 2,500 jobs in Windsor. It's a, it's a breathtaking amount of money. It's more money than you can probably...
I just turned my pockets out listening.
I did like... I saw a note today from Doug Nesbitt, who's part of the rankandfile.ca operation. And he wrote about, you know, this, these buckets of money that are being given to corporations with no equity. Right. The governments get have no ownership. They have no say after they've handed over the, this money. And there's no strings, really, to this money. And he said, and to think the multi-billion dollar corporate handouts could have financed the creation of a public vehicle manufacturing corporation, as the Green Jobs Oshawa campaign demonstrated.
Well...
I'm glad he's remembered that and is referencing that.
That's no, that's very, it's good to be reminded. Yes, a lot of really good ideas emerged from the struggle around trying to attempt to preserve that the GM plant. And of course, the best game they play to stop it is just to shrug it off and to try to make sure that it's not people are not reminded. So, this article appeared where?
Oh, it's just a note on Facebook.
I'm sorry?
It's just his note on Facebook. I don't know if he's going to write more about it.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's worth writing about. The amount of money that is being given to Volkswagen and Stellantis is more than 12 times the amount of money that the Green Jobs Oshawa feasibility study estimated would be required to purchase the GM plant in Oshawa and convert it to the production of vehicles for public fleets. So for that amount of money, they could have 12 vehicle assembly plants or more.
Well, and there's another detail. We've spoken to you previously about it. After all, you are a member of Unifor and major union, and we're talking about organized labor here. These jobs are not, there's no guarantee they're going to be union jobs.
No, and there's no guarantee what wages or benefits they're going to receive.
It probably sounds an odd question, but why wouldn't union leaders be saying, we want union jobs? By the way, I mean, let me just mention, President Biden, when he was either running or just won the election, but he said, good union jobs.
Yes.
We're going to invest in good union jobs. Where is the union part of this?
We don't seem to see any. Like I said, there seems to be very few strings.
Are these the guys who thought of the tier system? Because sounds like another favor being done for the monopolies.
No, that's right. These corporations absolutely have driven down the conditions of working class through strategies like that of driving down the starting wages of the in these major corporations, where the work that's being done is incredibly profitable. The every single GM worker in North America generates something in the range of $200,000 profit for GM. Every single worker in the course of a
that's
year.
That's very kind of them.
$200,000.
Do you get a silver watch with that?
And the starting pay for an auto worker in Canada, unionized in 2007, was $28.82 an hour, and today it's $23.67. And that's not without even adjusting for inflation.
Well, that's leadership.
They have
leadership and solidarity.
They have driven down the conditions of life of the people who assemble their vehicles.
And organized labor is supposed to jump up and down with pleasure that Volkswagen and Stellantis are going to get this money, even though they're very unlikely, from the sound of it, to become organized.
Or if they are unionized, then at what under what conditions? It's certainly not clear at all.
It's going to be very competitive with the guys, you know, making hamburgers.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great story, something to watch. And the next one we're going to watch, and we'll be asking you about this in the near future, of course, is a couple of months from now, it's going to be time for the auto workers to come to a contract moment with the people we used to call the Big Three. I'll let you tell me quickly, why aren't they called the Big Three anymore? Well, where are they called the Big Three?
The UAW still tends to refer to GM, Ford, and Stellantis as the Big Three. In Canada, they tend to be called the Detroit Three, which is where the headquarters, at least, of GM and Ford still are. And that's because the Toyota and Ford, Toyota and Nissan and Honda have just as many plants and workers in North America as the other three, so it's they're not the biggest three anymore by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But they are the biggest three of the unionized companies, because the other companies have no unions in their operations in the United States or Canada. And mm-hmm. the bargaining is coming up. The new president of the UAW, Sean Fain, gave a speech this week in which he talked about the trillions of dollars that those three companies have made in profits over the last 10 years. And I can't remember the number of trillions, but it was trillions of dollars. And he made a point. He said that's trillions with a T, like time to get rid of tears. And
he
trillion
said that.
Like with a T, like, you know, time for cost of living. So,
all right.
And they've upped their strike pay to $500 a week, and they said that you know, they are taking on issues that may require workers to go on strike, and they're telling them that they should get ready for that, because it's time to fight. And I hope that the leadership of Unifor and the members in the auto industry of Unifor are paying attention and will find ways to reach out to work together with the UAW workers, because we're bargaining with the same companies at the same time. It's
same
a great
time.
Opportunity.
Well, that's the one we're going to follow. Tony Leo, Unifor, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, bye-bye. This is Tater Report, CIUT. 89.5 FM.